are on.
Are we televised?
We are not televised.
Oops. I told Marlene we were, so I was wrong.
Oops. You have to apologize later.
I will.
All right, let's go ahead and call the Kaiser Long Range Planning Task Force meeting to order. And can we get a roll call?
Ron Burson.
Here.
Alan Barker.
Here.
Keith Blair.
Here.
Don Clark.
Here.
Kevin Dial.
Here.
Nelson Salsaman.
Here.
Jonathan Thompson.
Here.
Kathy Clark.
Here.
Laura Reed.
Here.
Kim Freeman.
Here.
Marlene Parsons.
She is excused.
Roland Herrera.
Also excused.
Amy Ryan. And Bruce Anderson.
Here. All right.
You have a quorum.
In front of you are the minutes from last year's meeting. Is there any discussion on those?
Mr. Chair, I'd move approval.
Second. It's been moved and seconded that we approve the minutes from last year's meetings as presented. Any further discussion? All right, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion passes. All right. So now we're on to item number four. I guess it's Mr. Wood's turn.
Actually, I'm going to start off.
Mr. Oh, you're going to start off.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy, right? So, just wanted to welcome everybody here. Just as a history of what you're doing here. During the Great Recession, we started having this meeting. And state budget law prohibits us from calling the budget committee back together outside of budget season. So we created a new group called the Long Range Financial Planning Task Force. You all. Which happens to, just sort of coincidentally, have the exact same membership as the Budget Committee, which is very convenient for being able to share information throughout the year. The original intent of the committee was for us to be able to float ideas past you, sort of sensitivity testing on cuts, potentially, because we were going through cuts at that particular time. Measures that we may or may not have to take, get your ideas on how to prioritize different topics. And we've sort of moved past that now. And so we're in a very stable place in terms of our fiscal capacity. I mean, we're certainly not going to be buying everybody Mercedes or anything like that, but we're holding our own. But this is an excellent opportunity now for us to give you sort of a mid-year glimpse of how we've done so far and what it's looking like coming into the next year, so that as we present the budget for you, there aren't any surprises. So that's how we use this meeting. That's why you're here. And it doesn't have to take hours and hours. It can be a fairly efficient meeting, but we certainly want you to have a good sense of where we're heading coming into the budget season, which is going to start in another month or so here, and answer any questions that you might have. So there you have it. With that, I'll give it over to Tim, and it's his meeting.
Thank you. Again, thank you everyone for coming tonight. I know the sun's out, so it gets a little harder to be inside sometimes. I was just saying I got a sunburn over the weekend, so I'm a little bit still struggling. Yard work's a terrible pain to have. So I guess to start off the night, again, to reiterate what Chris said, this is kind of a big brush paint into the future. So a lot of these things are not super refined yet. These are just some trends that we're starting to see, things that we're picking up on. The budget for next year is not even remotely close to being done. We're still a long ways out. This meeting originally was going to be in January, and I apologize for that we didn't follow through with that. I really wanted to wait a couple more months until we had a little more information on the police and the parks fee. I think that's an important enough game changer for what we've been doing to hold out and wait and see what some of those numbers were coming through as. Also to give an update as to what we're using those fees for as well. The first item on the agenda tonight is the stormwater system. As a reminder for some of the newer folks, this is a system that we inherited from Marion County and also the City of Salem. So we're not exactly sure what we have. We've been doing a project for the last several years of doing a televised video of all of the stormwater systems. As of today, we're roughly 60%, 60 to 70% in that range through videotaping the entire system. Once that's done, we'll have a much better idea of where the trouble areas are, what we need to fix as part of a long-range plan. What we're doing now is just trying to keep up, see what we have, and if there's any immediate concerns, we address those, do the repairs, and move forward. This fund, this system also has a lot of regulatory unknowns as well as we go through the permitting process. So with what we have here is the best case as far as what we know as of now. With this system, since we don't know a whole lot, we're not sure exactly what we're getting into. We're trying to do this as a pay-as-you-go system. We've been able to avoid issuing any kind of debt with this system. We could easily go out and issue debt and fix everything that we find, but it just doesn't make sense until we know the whole scope of what we have. So we've been trying to do somewhat of an even rate increase to keep up with some of the capital outlay type of items. If we didn't have any capital outlay, we probably wouldn't be doing a lot of rate increases till we get a lot farther along. With this, though, as we indicated last year, we've been doing about a 55 cent per equivalent service unit rate increase. And this financial forecast also predicts a 55 cent increase for the next year as well. That equates to about an 8.4% increase for a single family. And it sounds like a big number, but it's, like I say, it's just 55 cents. For the year, for a single family, it's going to equate to an additional $6.60. So it's still in the fairly reasonable range at this point. So with that, if you have any questions, I would be free to address those at this point.
So we talked about this last year, this continuing to grow, that unrestricted fund balance, that it looks like your projections in, I didn't get to 1920, but 2021, it's about 18% compared to the total resources, which gets up to 21.7% in the next year. I mean,
correct.
We need this steady increase if we're just continuing to like build up the unrestricted fund.
In fact, in that 1 year, at some point, you're correct, we will scale that back a little bit. We're looking at 21-22 of not having an increase at all as far as the rates go. So it's kind of a guessing game at this point. This is our best rollout. We're trying to keep 60 days worth of cash supply on hand at any given time, just so that we have enough to cover our operating bills for one billing cycle, or essentially 2 months. So as you can see, 18-19, we're actually projected to drop down to about 49 days. So we're actually going a little bit below where we realistically should be. To the extent that we do identify cost savings through either the capital outlay or materials and services, or revenues come in higher than expected, that'll change a little bit. But for the immediate future, I think we, rather than jump around and say, oh, we need an 80 cent increase this year and 20 cent the next year, we tried to keep it a little bit even, just so there's not a lot of surprises.
I'm sorry. So again, I always go back to the term long range here. And so long range, you folks recognize that by at least your numbers here in 2021, you're probably holding too much of a balance there. I mean, you got 96 days, almost 22%.
Correct. We'll probably scale back unless there's something significant that we don't identify that comes up.
Thank you.
Madam Mayor.
Thank you. So in our bidding process for projects that we have done in the last year versus about 5 years ago, what have you seen in terms of the cost for getting those projects delivered?
I'll turn that over to Mr. Lawyer.
For the most part, they're higher than anticipated, higher than the engineer's estimate. One project recently, the Dearborn Bridge project, actually came in a little under the estimate, which was a surprise to us. But pretty much without fail, every project we've bid for the last year has been over the engineer's estimate.
Because?
People are busy. There's a lot of work, and so we're paying the price. Contractors are able to up their prices because everybody's busy. It's not... materials are going up as well, but my belief is it's more just demand of the services, and there's a lot of work going on, a lot of work in the region, And so the companies can increase their prices. And that's not just unique to Kaiser. It's other agencies are seeing the same thing.
Thank you.
I have a question, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
So you said the Dearborn Bridge, is that? It's actually on, so it's just me. So the Dearborn Bridge, is that in stormwater or is that in street?
Both. A portion of the bridge project is realigning a 30-inch storm drain line from Verda and Dearborn down to the creek, or down near the creek. And so that portion of the project will be paid by the stormwater fund, and the rest of the project will be paid by the street fund.
But the majority of it is the street
fund. Majority is the street fund. Absolutely. Yeah. Majority is, I think the bid price for the storm drain work was $247,000. So a $1.8 million job. So.
Councilor Freeman?
So, Bill, I know with the Stormwater Task Force and Elizabeth's working on the DEQ permit, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of unknowns potentially and some additional work. Is some of that hitting here, or it's a different?
We've included everything that we pretty much know we're going to be required to do.
Okay.
The permit is getting closer and closer and closer to be final. We really believe it's pretty close. And so we've put things together accordingly to meet the requirements that are contained in the draft permit. There's still some chance it could change. But I would say we have included, at least for next year, compliance what we think the permit's going to contain.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. Yes, sir.
Question, I think, for Tim. Is any of the amount under this particular item dictated by anything, since we're we don't own this system, or is it anyway dictated by Salem, I guess, in terms of the rates and anything that gets built into the rates?
Not for this system.
Okay.
That would just be for the sewer system.
Okay. Yeah, we actually sanitary?
Yeah. Sanitary.
Oh, okay. Sanitary. Okay. Correct. Gotcha. Thank you.
Any other questions on this one?
Yeah, do we have the materials that will be needed so far with what problems we found? Do we already have the materials in hand for that?
No.
Okay, thank you.
No. Most of the stuff we found that our staff are working on are smaller repairs. We've got a few. Well, this 30-inch line I mentioned on Dearborn was one that was identified as a need. It actually currently goes under a house, so kind of a good idea to move it from underneath the house. The ideal time to do it with the Dearborn Bridge project. But.
Yeah.
So the materials we use for the small repairs, we have a lot of that on hand, but the big stuff is just ordered as necessary.
All right, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
All right,
Okay, so I guess the big message is consistent with last year, we'll be seeing a 55-cent increase when the budget time rolls around. Moving on to the water system. This is page 7. So this is the opposite story of the stormwater. This is a very mature system. There's very little surprises that we have with this. With this system, we have a blended rate structure, meaning that we have rates and fees that we get paid, but we also have some debt outstanding. So the debt has been used to help do more of a moderate rate increase as opposed to significant ones, and then dropping down a little bit more consistency similar to the stormwater. So we have two things that have been used as resources within this fund. Really, again, with this system, the increases that we're looking at are primarily driven by the capital outlay program. This one is driven off of the water master plan, which at this point within the plan, it's primarily water main replacements. We have several more years of doing water mainline replacements. Consistent with last year, we indicated that probably in the near future we'd be doing about a 3 to 4% rate increase. We are recommending a 4% rate increase this year as well. We kind of have a target that we're hitting in 1920. You'll see that our cash supply actually drops down again below our 60-day supply. Temporarily to 52. We'll see that jump back up in 2021 when we actually pay off our existing debt. So that's kind of the convergence that we're looking at, and that's why we're dropping down a little bit while still maintaining a 4% rate increase this year.
Okay.
say one other, if I could grab one other little bit of information about debt, sort of philosophically, because we've talked about debt issuance a number of times. When we started approaching construction of the master plan, CIP, a capital improvement plan. So the council at the time, and I think it was a good decision, had a decision to make of how to fund building the capital improvement plan. And there are a number of different ways you can do it. You can either pay all cash as you go. You can pay all debt. You can take out bonds and pay that off over time, or you can do a little bit of each. And council chose to do a little bit of both. Keep our debt issuance lower than just bonding all of it. But at the same time, one of the reasons that you issue debt for a fund like this is not necessarily just so that you can keep your rates lower, and that was your rate increases lower, and that was certainly one of the considerations. But it's also a philosophical issue of who you charge for the repairs. So the kinds of projects we're doing in the water fund are generational projects. These lines will last more than one generation of Kaiser resident. And so the question becomes, who do you charge? Do you charge the people that are living here right now for 100% of the cost of improvements that will span multiple generations of resident? Or do you issue debt and try to capture future generations to help pay for some of those improvements as they move into the community over time? And so part of that decision to issue debt is not necessarily just financial, it's also philosophical. So for a city. So just throwing it out there, I like that kind of stuff. So
yes, sir.
So as we build out over the last about 10 years, there's been a real focus on Cascadia. Are seismic considerations put in? Because water is one of the main infrastructure pieces that fall apart on this. What is being done on the seismic piece for water?
All of our lines are designed to be retained, and so they'll withstand seismic activity as much as they can. No guarantees, obviously, because it's an unknown phenomenon, you know, what's going to really happen. But they are all built to withstand seismic as much as they can, restrained together pipelines that we hope will stay together. For us, we're more concerned about the wells than the pipe. Pipe's easier to fix. Well's not so much easy to fix. So we just don't know. You know, we won't know what we have until the event happens, and we'll have to evaluate it at that point.
Thank you.
Yep, Mayor Clark.
Thank you. Going back to your comments about philosophy, the other one was also to maintain our system. There are some governmental bodies that have chosen to let their system deteriorate to a certain point and then, you know, bond or, you know, find some way to just pay for or not maintain the system. So one of the things that impressed me when I first got on council was the water master plan, was that there was a plan to make sure that our water system remains reliable and clean and safe. And by pay-as-you-go, by continuing to monitor and maintain the investment we've already made. And that, I think, is something that we can be really proud of as a city, that we chose to do that rather than let things kind of go, you know, pinching pennies now and paying big dollars later.
Yeah, it's actually, there's an ecological point also about how much leakage do you allow your system to have. And so ours is roughly what?
About 4%.
Okay, so the average across the country is closer to 20%. You see systems aging enough to leak 20% of the water into the ground around them. So keeping your system... And not only is it the loss of a precious resource, but it's also loss of revenue, because you have to pump that. You incur cost in bringing that water from wherever the source is, and either treating it or not, but putting it in the pipe. And if you're just simply dumping 20% of it into the ground, that's expensive. So we can be very proud of a 4% loss. That's pretty remarkable, actually.
One of the things that allows us to do, and you'll see this in the budget presentation, is we've identified some things we need to do to the production system, the water production system, to provide better service in an emergency situation. Converting one well to an automatic start, so if the power goes out, that well starts without any staff being there. It just starts up and runs as necessary, as well as some bigger fuel tanks at a couple locations, so that, because they run on diesel as a backup. And instead of asking for a higher rate increase to fund those two projects, because our water loss is so low, I've chosen to scale back the water main replacement project for next year to fund those improvements. So.
So I'm going to go back to the long range planning thing. So last year, I think I asked the same question, that residential folks are paying 2.3 cents per CCF cubic, whatever foot of water, is that what that is? And multifamily is paying 1.57, which is quite a bit less. And then commercial is paying 1.61. Is there a plan eventually just to have, instead of having these across the board 4% increases, actually evening this up a bit instead of the residents of Kaiser, you know, absorbing more cost per unit?
But to answer your question, yes, that's in the works. We're thinking not 18-19, but 19-20, doing a complete water rate review. That's our feel at this point, because it does get down to a philosophical position and how the council and the budget committee really want to allocate, if you know, who's going to get a subsidy, if there's a subsidy, who's going to pay more, who's going to pay what. So that is in the works, and we've heard that, and we're working on it. Unfortunately, the last time we did it was about 12 years ago, I believe, and it cost us close to $40,000. So they're not inexpensive.
Is that reflected in this forecast here?
No, it's not at this point.
Okay.
So some of the questions that you ask yourself when you do a COSA, or cost of service analysis, there's really two main ones. Is, do you want to subsidize any class? Okay. And so, for instance, some cities may choose to subsidize industrial because they want the jobs, right? So they make the water cheap so they can bring industrial jobs to their community. That's a choice. It's a policy choice by the council. Then the other thing you look at when you do a cost of service analysis is the cost of any one class on the system itself. So different classes, so for instance, single family may actually use a greater percentage of the system than, say, multifamily, and therefore it's creating a larger burden on the system, creating more need for maintenance, et cetera, and therefore they pay a slightly larger rate to accommodate for that. I can't tell you that is the case here. I'm just saying that those are some of the things you look at when you do a cost of service analysis. One, economic development. Do you want to subsidize a class for any particular reason? And two, do you want to charge each class the true cost of their impact on the system? So, and we will look at those when we do a COSA.
Any other questions? All right.
Okay, moving on to the general fund. I also passed out a long-range planning task force supplemental data page. This didn't make it out in the original. This was actually just my notes, and I thought, well, I might as well just give you guys all my notes anyway. So I guess this is a look behind the curtain of what the things that I take a look at. When putting together the general fund long-range forecast, obviously the first thing is looking at revenues and what really goes into that, and taxes and assessments make up the largest piece. We are limited in how quickly those will go up, if at all. We have the 3% statutory limit, plus we get additional increase for new construction. When we look at the city of Kaiser, I did a quick look at the population, and that's the table in the upper left, and you can see that 16, 17, 18, we're starting to grow a little bit faster. You can see some of that's the impact of the new apartments, the retirement homes, those kind of things. You can also see a correlating increase in property assessed value. Over the course of the last 10 years, you can see that we've ranged between really 5.1% and 0.3% as far as an increase in assessed value. That directly plays into how many property taxes we receive. For the forecast, I typically go with about a 4% increase, with a 3% from just the increase in assessed value and an additional 1% from construction. So that's what you'll see reflected in this plan. And I think that's probably fairly stable into the future. As you look at the just the areas that we have that can still be built out, We've been consistently building over the last several years, and we're still at the, you know, the 4% range. So that's really what I've been looking forward to in the future. The next piece is license and fees. That also makes up a large component of our revenues. That's also directly tied to number of residents, as that's your franchise fees for PGE, Northwest Natural, Comcast, those kind of places. So to the extent that the outside third parties increase their rates, we see our revenues go up as well. But it'll also grow if you see increases in households, just because you have more places adding those services. So over the course of the last 10 years or so, we've seen increases anywhere between next to nothing to 5%. So I've thrown in a 2% increase, as that's been somewhat of the average over the last 10 years. Intergovernmental, that's primarily liquor and cigarette sales. Same thing there. Liquor bounces around every year, somewhat unpredictable. Cigarette revenues have been typically going down. So with that, again, over the last 10 years, we've seen about a 10% in total increase. So I've factored in about 2% growth for that as well. The next line, fines and forfeitures, municipal court revenue. We have reinstated some of our traffic safety group. We'll be adding more in the future. And until we see what that impact is, I've been kind of putting it at about a 2% increase as well, considering what we've done in the past. Then as you look at the other line item, you'll see a significant increase in 1920. That's due to the addition of the theater. So we're going to have a movie theater coming to town and paying the city some lease revenue. And then you also see the transfer in line item. This is relatively new for us. Majority of that into the future is transfer in of police service fee revenue. So that's where you're seeing that picked up into the general fund. During the current year, though, we had to borrow some money to do several projects. One project is to do some of the build-out for the movie theater, and then the other component is to buy some police radios for an upgrade at the radio system at the City of Salem so that we can be compatible with them. And that was chatted about at the Budget Committee meetings last year. So the next piece is really looking at the expenditures. As we look at wages, you can tell I have a chart here with the employee count. You can see that we've increased significantly during 2017-18. That's directly related to the police and the parks fees. So overall, the city will have about 101 employees, give or take, depending on hiring. We're going to add 5 additional police officers. We have 4 that are confirmed and 1 that's still in process. And then we also have 1 position that the person retired, and we have yet to backfill that position as well. So altogether, we'll be hiring 6 police officers this year, hopefully. We have 2 additional park employees. They're not officers at the parks, but I have officers on my mind. They could be, I guess. Give them a badge and some clippers. Okay. So that's where you're seeing the increase in the employee count go. With respect to cost of living, we're going to have a little bit different changes in the future. We had historically used the CPIW for Portland-Salem area. That index is no longer with us, so we'll be transitioning to another one that build the same concept, but a much larger region that we'll be looking at and doing a benchmark against. As you can see with our history, we don't exactly take the CPI at its face value. We do some adjusting for what we think we can afford as a city, plus, you know, what just some general trends as far as what we see with our comparators. So for the fiscal year 18-19 and moving forward, I've thrown in about a 3% rate increase or 3% cost of living increase. We'll see how that plays out each year as we start looking at the new cost index that we'll be using. The other large component, kind of the elephant in the room always, is PERS. I've shown you the chart at the bottom of my supplemental data page. That shows you the rates for the 3 different tiers. We have a tier 1, tier 2, and you can see the percentage increases You know, for the 1920, we're looking at 19.58% increase in the rates. For the OPSERT police and fire, we're looking at 24.11% increase. And then for OPSERT general, we're looking at 40.41% increase. It's a lot to stomach. I'll be honest when I look at these rates. One of the things to consider is just from the change in the rates themselves, it's going to impact our general fund by about $150,000. That will be the 1920 year, and you can see the big spike in retirement for that column there. There has been some legislation. Jonathan, you showed me an email today of some things out there. The state has adopted a bill that will let people pay additional money into the system to help reduce their unfunded liability. Unfortunately, the city or the state is also saying there's a match out there, but they're saying that you have to be over 200%, your unfunded liability has to be over 200% of your payroll valuation, which I did some quick looking around, and we're really talking places like City of Salem, City of Portland, Beaverton, Eugene, some of the larger cities, they're in the 200-250% range. We are sitting at about 137%. So the likelihood of any of the match money actually making it to us is slim to none. If it does, though, it would definitely be worth considering. Our unfunded liability is $9.7 million right now. It's not due right now, which is a good thing. It's due over the next 20, 30 years or whatever. But still, it would be nice to be able to cut that down a little bit. And that would, in the future, reduce our rates, so we wouldn't see these as large increases in the future. The good news is the investment return for PERS has been doing exceptionally well the last year. Unfortunately, we probably won't see the impact of that for about 6 years. So it's unfortunately the lag is just so long, it takes that long to get to us. We'll also be impacted over the next several years as people start to retire. A lot of the Tier 1, Tier 2 people who have the highest contribution rate, a lot of those are police officers that are getting towards the end of their career with us. We'd like them to stay as long as they want to, but a lot of them will be hitting their 25-year mark pretty shortly. With that, I guess I would reiterate that with our general fund, we are somewhat constrained. This is every year we kind of have the same game where we realistically budget our revenues and look at the major things that impact us as far as expenses go, and we typically budget in excess of our revenues by between $400,000 and $600,000. This is because we take each line item and we do our best guess as far as what a reasonable budget would be for that. So we do end up having some cost savings that ultimately help us to keep our ending fund balance at the required reserve amount. I guess I forgot to talk about health insurance. That's another one that people also like to talk about. Consistent with previous years, I've been budgeting about 9.95% increase in rates. That's probably on the high side. Looking back for the last 5 years, the rates for the different providers have increased anywhere from 6% to about 8.6%. That's kind of the blended rate for all the different providers that we have. So 9.9 is still a little high, but probably not a lot. So as we get more information, that'll probably drop down a little bit as well, and we'll have a little bit more cushion there as we look into the future. But typically, the city does come in with a $300,000 to $500,000 favorable budget variance. So that means we're able to go through the different budgets and identify places that we don't necessarily need to spend everything that we've budgeted. Also, as I indicated before, the general fund this year had to borrow for a couple of projects. You're going to see the transfer out column. About $550,000 over the next 3 or 4 years is going to have to be repaid to the other funds. And again, that was for the build-out of the movie theater area and also for the police radios. In addition, in the transfers out, you're going to see the parks. Rather than keeping the parks within the general fund, we've moved the entire department to its own fund to be in line with the park services fee. So when we get to that point, you'll be able to see a complete balanced budget for the park system. It's a standalone, and this amount represents the at least 2.5% of general fund resources that are dedicated to the parks going out. Right now, we're actually looking at closer to 3% being sent to the Park Services Fund as the general fund support. And I think that's all the information I have at this point. So again, the general fund continues to be constrained as we look into the future. But it's not too terrible as I look at that in consideration of our past history. So with that, is there any questions on the general fund?
How's marijuana?
Oh, how's marijuana? Well, during 2017-18, we're probably going to collect about $180,000 in marijuana tax. That amount covers the period of fiscal 17-18, but also 16-17. So we're actually seeing pretty much 2 years worth of marijuana tax come in 1 year. On an ongoing basis, my estimate is probably about $80,000 in marijuana tax. So again, it's a good sign, but it's not necessarily going to change a lot of the story at this point.
Councilor Anderson.
Okay, Tim, so where, what little bucket is that going to go into? Is that going to be intergovernmental or what?
Right now I have it all in taxes and assessments.
Okay, so that's, these numbers reflect your estimate?
That's correct.
Okay,
yes.
All right, thank you.
Any other questions on this page? Yes, sir.
You mentioned required reserve amount. How much is that?
Correct. We try to maintain 15% of our resources as a ending fund balance. That's the amount that we've somewhat done a rough study to say that this is the amount of cash on hand we need to get us from July 1st until the end of October when we start receiving property tax revenues.
Anything else? All right.
So we're going to start receiving the lease payments from the movie theater, I think it was October of next year. Was it March? I lost track. That's right, no, opening November. So have you been looking at that as possibly being that a portion of our unfunded actuarial liability for PERS? Rather than seeing how else we can spend it, just start socking that away. And I'm very disappointed, by the way, that we can't take advantage of that that matching fund. That would have been nice money to add on top.
Those numbers are actually plugged into these numbers, so we anticipated the lease payments. Now, what isn't in here is if we, and the city does own some other parcels of property that we could potentially do similar kinds of ground leases on and have had some queries about. So it does not include other potential ground leases that we may be able to enter into between now and then.
Thank you.
All right, moving on.
Okay, the next page is the long range plan for the park services fee. This is a new addition this year, but just wanted to throw it out there for folks to take a peek at. The fee was enacted in July and we started collecting it in November. So we have several months under our belt. At this point, the fee appears to be coming in almost exactly as we anticipated. However, the folks applying for the low-income, senior-related, age-related discount has been a lot lower than we originally anticipated. We're still seeing people trickle in with applications. So I guess we probably need to give it a couple more months for it to sink in and people to respond once they continue to see it on their bill. Overall, the process has been pretty painless as far as the city side goes. We have had a handful of people make complaints, but it's only been a handful. I've been very, very much surprised that we haven't had much more of a citizen outcry. So it's been pretty quiet. At this point, we only have one account that I'm aware of that they're intentionally not paying it. So I think that's good. That's a good start. This is the second month that, I guess at this point, both sides of the city, we bill each side one half 1 month and one half another month. At this point, they've all seen the full $16 fee hit their bill. So we're kind of moving forward. With the park services fee, this was designed to increase the level of park maintenance repairs. What we've done with this so far is we've added two parks employees to help with the repairs kind of thing, as well as Matt Lawyer and the Parks Board team have been doing a great job of working with people to try to prioritize, you know, what should we do with this fee into the future. Obviously, the Meadows Park is one of the areas that's being looked at and is going to be worked on this year. At this point, I'm going to turn it over to Bill to add a little bit more color of what we're doing with the parks fee.
Thanks, Tim. Robert and I discussed this, and with Chris as well, as this whole fee thing was becoming reality. And what we decided we wanted to do is to cover as much of the park system as we can, as often as we can, with improvements and replacements. And so Meadows was identified as the very first thing that needs to be done, replace the play structure there. So we're working on that to start that this fiscal year, finish it after July 1st. And then after July 1st, also, we're looking at replacing a sports court at Clagger Creek Park, one at Northview Park. Those are both old. Well, one's an asphalt pad. One is, I believe, concrete. But they've reached the end of their life. Things we inherited from the county. In addition to those two projects, we're looking at some trails resurfacing and additions, and that's throughout various parks in the system. Country Glen Park, Meadows will have some trail work done along with the new play structure. Claggett and Northview will, as along with the sports courts, to make sure that the new courts have ADA compliant access and good access. And there's a few other places, and I don't remember the parks off the top of my head, that Robert's identified for some trail work. We pretty much believe that'll be a pretty good summer's worth of work for next summer, or for this summer. And while they're doing that, we'll be planning for what we're going to do the following summer and identifying those priorities. So we don't have a real good 2 or 3 year plan yet. We didn't have time to do that. This happened pretty fast for us. I'm very happy for it. But that's one of the things Robert and I are going to work on this fall and winter, is put together a good, and with the Parks Board's help and their outreach, put together a good at least 3 year plan of improvements system wide, so we can present that to the public and let them know what to expect's coming.
And equipment,
yeah, that's the other thing. This year we bought some pickups, we bought a couple an additional lawnmowers, some weed eaters and things like that for the new staff that we have to get out and do increased level of service in all the park system. So this first year had some big hits for equipment and vehicles, but we won't be seeing that again in the future to this level. We will routinely replace vehicles as they age, replace equipment as it ages, but we shouldn't have to add vehicles and equipment like we did with the addition of these two people. So thank you for everybody that's paying the parks fee. We really appreciate it.
Councilor Reed.
Thank you. I just wanted to make sure I understood this. This graph with the revenue and expenses showing here, is this showing that we're basically taking in more with the $4 fee, we're taking in more now than we'll need, and that'll even out somewhere between the 1920 and 2021, at which point our expenses are expected to exceed our revenue, but over that it's going to essentially balance itself out, and then we're going to relook at that fee again in the 22-23 year. Is that kind of what I'm understanding from that?
Essentially, that's correct, yes. We are collecting more right now just due to the ramp-up period that we've had. But you're correct, in 1920, at that point, we'll be collecting about as much as we're going to be spending. With the park fee, it's a little easier. We have projects that we're going to be doing more or less, in addition to the employees. So we have a little bit of timing issues of when does the project get done, that kind of a thing. So there'll be a little bit more wiggle room once we get the 2 to 3 year plan really mapped out a little bit better. But with what we know at this point, you're correct, we'll be able to make it to the 23-24 fiscal year before we'll actually have to do something at that point. But again, if that'll be project dependent with this fund.
And the other one variable that I don't believe was well reflected in these numbers is population growth. So these two fees are will see increase as people add residences to the community. So, and we were pretty conservative on those projections. So if those are a little higher than we thought, then these revenues may actually be a little higher than we think, and that'll even out over time also, push that cross point further back. So,
and just following up, that fee was initially agreed upon as a sort of dynamic sort of process, and that was something that we had agreed with the community that we were going to look at and reassess periodically. So just wanted to...
That is correct. At each budget cycle, we will have the opportunity to address that if we so choose.
Councilor Ryan?
Thank you. Just point of comment regarding the Tim's comment regarding the the objections that we've had. It seems like we've had quite a few people come to council and really didn't really understand and were a little bit confused. And it seems like once they had the information, they were very supportive. And so I found that in the community as well. So I'm sure there's a percentage that are not to negate them, but it really did seem like there was quite a bit of support once people understood how it all came together and benefited them. So thank you.
Anything else on the park services fee? All right, moving on.
Moving on to page 10, the police services fee. Basically everything I said with the park services fee, with the exception that this was implemented to add 5 additional officers, and this is for employee costs for wages, health insurance, retirement taxes, also uniforms, service equipment, and vehicles to get them up and running. Like I indicated earlier, I am pleased to say that we have 4 people on board, and I believe there's 3 additional people for the 2 remaining positions that are outstanding. So is that still correct, Chief?
Well, so there's 1 remaining position of the 5 covered in the police fee. We had a retirement. We also have other looming retirements. We opened a new process, hiring process. Right now we're taking applications. That'll probably be we'll probably perpetuate that, I'm sure, as we continue to see what they're calling the silver tsunami of retirements. But again, I think we'll see the 5th position filled shortly. We'll have 4 in the April class, in an April class at the Police Academy. I expect to have 1 in the, I'm sorry, 4 in the March class. Expect to have 1 in the April class. Go ahead, Tim.
Okay. With that, based off of our analysis, this one's a little, the costs are a little more solid because they're employee related. So this one, we're projecting that, you know, around 1920, that year we'll be collecting about as much as we're spending in a given year. However, we're going to be having to readdress in 22-23 rather than 23-24 like the parks. And again, that's just because a lot of the costs that we're dealing with are fairly solid, such as retirement and insurance and labor costs. So with that, is there any questions?
Mr. Burson?
So Chief, you get 5 new officers, right?
Correct.
And then you have a retirement. Is that person also being hired? Because I hear 4 going to the academy and then 1.
Yeah, so 5 are covered under the police fee. We've hired 4 under the police fee. We have a 5th that, I mean, it's not fair to that person for me to weigh in public what the decision is around that. I can tell you, and I would tell him, that it's looking good for him. And then we have a 6th that is an opening right now due to retirement. And we'll fill that, but not under the police fee, under the current budget.
Thank you.
If I can say something real quick about the silver tsunami. It's funny that we're talking about that like it's a new concept. The silver tsunami actually was anticipated to hit about 5 or 6 years ago. But the Great Recession pushed it off until now. And people are finally sort of back where they were prior to this recession, and we're really starting to see it. Now, the so we got 5, 6, 7 years worth of reprieve. However, it compacted how many we're going to see all at once, as opposed to sort of a spread out matriculation. Now it's going to be a lot all at once. And so it's something, I mean, it's going to be something we're going to have to deal with in not just police, but in all of our fields as the brain drain occurs and folks with a lot of good skills and a lot of experience exit the field. And unfortunately, government's a tough gig, to get millennials and younger folks interested in. So we're not seeing a lot of folks entering school wanting to do what we do. So we're going to have to become creative about who we recruit into these positions. So,
Chief, how many people do you have just off the top of your head within 3 or 4 years of reaching their 25?
You know, Michelle probably has those figures.
I'm just curious. I mean, I know I put you on the spot. I'm just curious.
Better than I do.
I would say there's a big difference between reaching their 25 and actually anticipating or ready for retirement. But I would say we have a half a dozen folks in that category over the next year.
Wow.
Okay.
Next year or two.
Ooh.
Yeah.
All right. Mayor Clark.
Thank you. I was reading the minutes prior to this meeting and reflecting on the conversation we had a year ago about our police staffing. And the great plan that the chief put together on what we needed and why was a huge part in being able to work through the process and do the public outreach with our community about what we needed in terms of level of service. So I wanted to say a big thank you to the police chief, human resources, and actually all of our senior staff, Chris and Tim, for really working together to figure that out and then bringing something really solid to the budget committee and then the community to have that conversation about what it really costs. So this is the first year that I've been on the budget committee, or Long Range Plan Task Force, that we have not had to say, how are we going to find the money to fund one or to maybe eke out another position, but that we really got down to the nuts and bolts and said, this is what we need, this is what it costs, are we going to pay it? And the council said yes, and the community has said yes. So I just want to say thank you to everybody for the work and the thought that went into that.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I'd like to just add a comment to that. So many folks in this room were participated in helping us define what those five positions were going to look like. And if you'll give me just 1 minute, I want to tell you a bit of a change. So one of those five positions was attached to CREW, the Community Resource Unit, which is primarily designed for livability. And maybe you recall part of that conversation was we were going to use that as a career development position. So we can take patrol officers and attach them there, and they can get a closer look at problem-oriented policing and such. And then this silver tsunami became very apparent to us, as, by the way, police officers, they talk here, but they're really serious when they start talking to PERS and start talking to HR. And then we realize that this really is upon us. We also heard from the community that they really do want traffic safety addressed. And I heard guys in my agency say, we really do want to address traffic safety from a traffic safety perspective, as in making it safer for people to travel through Kaiser, not just getting out and hammering people with tickets. They've really picked up on this problem-oriented policing idea with regard to traffic. So we decided to develop, to take that fourth position in CREW, actually the fifth position in CREW, and make another traffic officer out of that. By doing that, we would take a patrol sergeant and move him over to traffic to make a true traffic team, and then use that patrol sergeant position as an acting sergeant position to run officers through that to do their career enhancement in that position instead. Did you get my stammering there, Tracy? Okay, Ron got it. We'll do that career enhancement within patrol. And another great advantage of this was by lifting traffic and the grants from Trevor Winning, who oversees schools and traffic, that allowed us to assign the DHS cross-reporting from Detective Lathrop to Sergeant Winning, which is going to free up about another 250 to 500 hours a year out of the detectives. And so it's worked out marvelously. I didn't see it at the time. I wish I could take credit for it, but it ended up, we landed in a really good place for that. So okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. Sir.
So by hiring all five or six with a retirement, you create another bubble that creates a 25-year problem for somebody else. Have you looked at, again, this is a recruiting thing. I know we go out and find people in other forces Again, they don't require the DPSST, and a lot of the training, and you bring them as a plug and play, and then you off cycle your phases, and you don't get that crazy, everybody goes at the same window down the road. So just, has there been a move to see if there are other people that would love Kaiser as much as we do?
There has. And we've talked about that also, about how to stagger your talent. There are advantages and disadvantages to hiring somebody who's more seasoned. One of the advantages is they can end up on the road much quicker. You have a little bit better predictability of how they're going to do here because of their past performance and their other places. They're seasoned, et cetera, et cetera. They're also more expensive right out the bat. So you end up, spending more up front. Also, it's difficult. What we have found, in fact, we played with this. We tried to hire a lateral position directly into our detectives because we really wanted a Spanish-speaking detective. And so we decided to go, Chief decided, and we agreed to go in and specifically try to recruit a lateral, somebody who's been out in the force, who speaks Spanish and is a seasoned detective. Couldn't get them. It's just hard. It's the law enforcement field is getting more and more difficult to get people to actually move and to do things with. And it's also getting harder to recruit young folks into because of various things. So,
yeah, I'll just touch on that just for a second. It's really the conjunction is unfortunate, but it's a good one. At the same time, it's becoming harder to hire people in general. Law enforcement is raising our expectations and requirements of what these people look like. When I started, it was truly about figuring out who out there is doing something bad and taking them to jail or giving them a ticket. It is very much not that anymore. It is very much about looking at a holistic person who can identify root problems and solve them. And that requires a different personality set. As we look to hire more people like that, it makes our pool a lot smaller. So it's...
Yeah, not only that, but like the Chief said, they're a very different looking person. So when you used to hire cops, even when I got into this business, God, 20 years ago, more than 20 years ago.
You were only 11, we understand.
I just turned 47 the other day. Cops looked alike. You all looked exactly alike. You could tell exactly who they were. They had the same personality type. They were the same kids in high school. And they were all type A personalities, sort of, military discipline, that kind of stuff. Right now, that is absolutely not the person you want being a police officer. Because a big chunk of what they do isn't what they used to do. They're not busting down doors and jumping over fences anymore. They're frontline social workers. That takes a very different personality and very different skill set than used to be the case. And it's causing a lot of folks pause as to whether or not they actually want to become police officers to even enter the field. And so it's, the whole profession is changing.
So, Councilor Freeman?
Well, I have the privilege of having a stepson who's a cadet. And I can say he's done several ride-alongs. And the officers that he's riding with are really encouraging him to continue with schooling and looking at some different types of schooling to actually position him to be an officer here. And they are talking retirement by the time he's done with school. So kudos to the officers to look at existing cadets, and we hired some reserves, I understand, as well. So we're grooming the people that are here, which I think is a very positive thing, just so he's thinking and he's looking at different types of classes as he's going through college right now and getting some really good positive reinforcement from the officers that he's riding along with. So I think that's another avenue of looking at who our resources are now and how we keep them hopefully with us in the long term to maybe potentially fill some of those retirements. So thank you, Chief.
I did a ride along in preparation for the last budget committee session, and it was Awesome. So if you guys ever want to, I highly recommend it. It was not at all what I expected. We spent the morning going from homeless camp to homeless camp, and it was very obvious that Lieutenant Copeland had been working very closely with most of these individuals and actively working to get them off the streets, that's what I told him. I said, I did not know that you were a social worker. So, I mean, if you haven't done it, I highly recommend you give it a shot, so.
Just one more thing I'd like folks to know, and hopefully most people of the community have learned this at this point, that we also have offices here for Marion County parole and probation. So they're right here in our building working closely with our police and helping people stay on their parole and probation and be successful. And we also have a DHS, Department of Human Services worker housed, again, right here. We have two now. Okay, I just got updated. Two, because, that nexus between our public safety and social work is so strong. And as I understand it, we heard from at the West Kaiser Neighbors Association that it's helped police understand what DHS does better and DHS to understand what our police do better, so they've been able to better partner in serving the people they encounter in whatever situation they're in. And I think that was incredibly forward-thinking to build that relationship.
Anything else on the police services fee? All right. On to other business. Budget committee meetings and timelines.
Okay. So budget committee is going to kick up in May. May 1st is the first one, and that'll be a Tuesday night?
May Day.
Uh-oh. Oh, this could go badly. For this upcoming budget season, we are going to be providing some food beforehand, so feel free to show up a few minutes before and grab a sandwich or meat and cheese or whatever we're going to be having. A three-hour plus meeting, can really wear you out if you're not in the right state of mind. So with that, it's a 6 o'clock start time, and I guess we will see you then.
All right, and then next year's long-range planning task force.
So I threw this on here. Like I indicated earlier, we had talked about a January meeting this year. I think maybe we should consider keeping it about this time in March. It gives us enough time to get through half of the year, get that reconciled and proofed out, and also see some of our key revenue streams as they come in. It gives us plenty of time in advance of the budget process. I can honestly say at this point we don't have a budget anywhere near close to being done. I still don't have most of the information from a lot of people. So if there's any additional input that people wanted to add to the process, we can definitely take it at this time and fold it into the budget process. So with that, I guess my recommendation to the committee, to the task force, would be to keep it in March.
Any discussion on that?
I just have one thing.
Mr. Burson?
So I think that's what we were talking about last year, was it felt as though when we had this meeting that the budget had pretty much been written. But if you're telling me that there can be a discussion at this meeting and make those changes, then I'm fine with March. But I think that's what we were talking about, moving it up, that you hadn't got so far in the process that basically if we made changes, it was going to wreak havoc on your budget.
I would agree. Yes, at this time we can definitely fold any changes, recommendations people have into the budget.
I'm good.
Okay. All right. Anything else? Yeah. Fire away.
So, Tim, at the West Kaiser Neighborhood meeting this last week, they asked when the budget is normally released. Do you have, is it usually the end of April?
I believe I have it scheduled to be released April 20th. And that'll be available on our website as well as a hard copy within the office if people want to stop by.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
I'd like to find out a couple of questions about our existing employee base that we have right now doing the street services, underground, our different departments and things. What age group are they typically right now? Are they getting to be like 40 and up at this point?
Hey, that's not old.
Yes, kind of, and no. that's a tough question because we've hired four new people Well, yeah, four new people in the last 6 months, less than 6 months, because a couple left, a couple new positions. So I'm going to tell you that the bulk of our public works staff are probably in their 30s and up. I don't think I have too many less than that.
The reason I pose the question is because I know that last year we were able to get some small truck cranes and stuff for the crews, mm-hmm. which allow them to not have to, you know, use their back to pick up some of that heavy stuff and put it inside the trucks. Mm-hmm. And having been in the field for a number of years, I would like to see that we, you know, incorporate as much as we can so that as our team grows in age, that they're a little bit easier on them with equipment or whatever it needs to be, so we keep them in the field that much longer without any problems.
Sure. Happy to look at that every year. We try to do that on a regular basis anyway, right. But I'll certainly carry that forward to my folks and have them make sure they're looking at that.
Thank
Absolutely.
You.
You bet. The one thing I will mention that's a benefit for my department is my guys aren't PERS employees when they started here, and so they have to work to retirement age. They don't have the 25 or 30 year period. So I'm fortunate for that because I can get a lot more years out of them than I could if they were PERS employees when they started. I've got a number of employees that are pushing 25 years right now. So they have to go. These guys that are in their 40s have a lot of time to work.
Well, it's only cops that get to go at 25 years.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. And judges.
Anything else for the good of the order? All right. We're adjourned.
Thank you.
All right.
This number in a way. I mean, yeah, now I can.